numerous sites, Shiloh, Shomron, Yericho, the Yarden, Megiddo, Teldan, Beersheba, Chasor, Beit Shemesh, Tel Azek, En Gedi. There are even places in Chutz Laaretz. In the LA conference, we talked about a trip to Haran, where Avram Avinu had been. Because in Natinek, there are places though in Chul. What I'd like to focus on here is Yerushalayim, its unique character, and some of the sites in Yerushalayim that relate to Tanakh. The first one I want to mention, it just goes back to what I talked about in the previous talk. I talked about that cities that have walls from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, read the Megillah on the 15th. The only city in the world that does that exclusively on Tzavot is Yerushalayim. The question is why? Why do we treat Yerushalayim as a city that had a wall from the time of Yeshua ben Nun? How do we know which cities had? And the simple answer is Masorah. It's not based on the archaeology, it's not based on the findings, it's not based on modern scholarship. It's based on the Masorah that we know which cities, that Yerushalayim was a city that was Mukaf Koma. The fact that it's based on the Masorah doesn't preclude that I could ask, where is that wall that surrounded Yerushalayim in the time of Yeshua ben Nun? And here it is. You can see the wall, this wall that we're looking at, hold on, let me see the map. This wall that we're looking at over here, that's the wall that, according to the archaeologists, we could date to pre-Yoshua, to the before the Canaanite wall that was there before Yoshua came in. For those of you who have been in here, David, the steps that you see over here are the steps that lead down from the upper part of here, David, to the water section. You go into the water just at the top of these steps. Most people don't continue down to the point where you can see this wall. But this wall is a wall with significant halakhic ramifications. This is the wall that establishes that Yerushalayim was Mukaf Chomer Miyamot Yeshua ben Nun. Before we go to later books of Tanakh, we could even start with Sefer Bereishis. Avram is on his way to the Akedah. It says, "Vayom Hashlishi Vayisa Avram Es Einav Vayar Es Hamakom Merachok." Where was Avram coming from? Avram was coming from the south, from Hebron. When one comes from the south, along the road that was used at that time, what's called Derech Avot, where is the first place that you could clearly see Harabais? There are places today much further south where you could see Yerushalayim. From Neve Daniel already, you could see the buildings of modern Yerushalayim. But where is the first place that you could really see Harabais? Well, he was looking from Ir David southward. And you see in the front is the cutest 5-year-old in the country. And in the circled area, the white circle, you could see the top of Amon HaNetziv. Amon HaNetziv is today where the UN headquarters are. That you could see from Ir David. And looking from Amon HaNetziv, that mountaintop is probably the earliest place where you could see the Har HaBayis. This is the view that Avram would have had when Avram was coming from Hebron, going up towards Vayaras HaMakom Rechok. He was come up the back of Amon HaNetziv. He's on the top, looking northward, and he sees the Har HaBayis. We have a pasuk in Divrei Yomim, which retells a story that also told the Melachim. It tells us that Vahu Yechizkiyo, Chizkiyo HaMelech, Sosam es Motze Meimei Gichon. He blocked up the waters of the upper Gichon, Vayashreim Lamata. He straightened them out downward, Ma'arova. So the waters went down and westward, Le'ir David, into the city of David, Vayislach Chizkiyo B'chol Ma'aseyo. So we see here that Chizkiyo did something with the water system, rerouted the water to bring it into Ir David to prepare for the siege of Sancheriv. The Radak tells us, Ritzon la'amar yishirem v'imidam la'mata me'ha'aretz. He dug some sort of subterranean channel and brought it into the city. Well, first of all, before we try to find where that is, did Chizkiyo do good or bad? There's a Mishnah in Pesachim that tells us, Shisha dvarim osa Chizkiyo melech Yehuda, ashlosh ahogu lo v'ashlosh lo ahogu yo. Chizkiyo did six major things, and three of them Chazal approved, and three they did not approve. It says, Sosom es me'e Gichon ha'elyon v'lo hodu lo. So according to the Mishnah in Pesachim, this rerouting of the waters of the Gichon did not receive the approval of Chazal. Interestingly, in Ovid Davnosan, we have a similar sounding Marma Chazal, Yechizkiyo melech Yehuda asa arba dvarm v'eskimu dato v'das ha'makum. There we're told he did four, there's again six things listed, four and two, and four of them he received the approval of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Das Elyon, not in Das Hakom. And one of them, it says, Sosam Mei Gichon, V'skima Dato L'Das Hamakom. So she seemed to have a steer between two sources of Chazal. This one tells us that reroute in the water received divine approval. The Mishnah in Chacham says that Chazal did not approve it. In any case, where was that water? Where was that channel that he dug? There is in what's called Ir David today one underwater, one underground water channel. Here's a picture of it inside. Here's a picture of just the general area, so we can see where that was. If you see around, you have the light gray is the walls of the old city, what we call the old city today. Here is where the Beis Hamikdash would have been. Down here is Ir David. And if we zoom in on that a little bit, we see here this underwater, this is the snaking pathway of that underwater channel. Look again over here. Here we zoom in closer. Up here at the very top is Harabayit. This area is Ir David. Here is where there's an underwater spring that we call the Gichon today. This snaking path is the path that that underwater, underground water channel takes. Again, where is that channel from? Who dug the channel? Well, it would be nice if there was some sign. If it said, dug by, and then it gave a name of who dug it. We have something close. Near the exit of that channel, we have what's called the Silwan inscription. This is the original. There's a picture. It's kept today in the Museum in Istanbul. This year, actually, in honor of the 60th anniversary, it's been displayed in Israel, in the Israel Museum. Here's what it looks like if you look just at the writing. This is in the Ksav Ivri. In our modern Ksav Ashuri, this is what it says. In English, it says, the tunnel, and there's the story of the tunnel. Well, the axes were against each other, while three cubits were left to cut. And again, it tells the story. The only thing that's missing, and what's a shame, is that usually, when a king had a major project, somewhere on the inscription, it should tell us who the funder was, which king paid for it, which king instructed it, and nowhere on the Silwan inscription do we have that. So we're again left to worry, wonder who dug it and when it was dug. So until very recently, the only way the tunnel was dated was using paleography on philology of the Silwan inscription, meaning the handwriting, it looks like the type of script that was written at a certain time, and the language that was there is from a, it looks like language from a certain period. But that is not an exact science, and therefore, first of all, this could be a later copy of an earlier work. Could be they put up a plaque, the plaque got ruined, and they rewrote it. See, even if you could date the writing, that might not tell us when the tunnel was dug. And it could also be it's misdated, and really the tunnel was much newer than what the scientists say. In 2003, an article appeared in the scientific journal Nature. The article is in the handouts, and it was using a more precise science. They found like this, that the bottom of the tunnel is plastered. They dug a hole through that plaster, and if you could find plants in there, if you could find organic material, those plants must have predated the making of the tunnel, because when the tunnel was made, it was plastered over. There are also stalactites and stalagmites, stalactites hanging from the ceiling. Those stalactites must have started growing after the tunnel was dug. So what they did in this article that you have in the handout, they dated the organic material using carbon-14, they dated the stalactites using uranium-thorium dating, and that gives us a sandwich. It has to be later than the organic material and earlier than the stalactites. And lo and behold, it comes out just about 700 BCE, maybe a little earlier, which would be precisely when Chizkiyahu HaMelech would have been digging his tunnel. Thus, the paleography and the radiometric dating both date that tunnel that today in Ir David, that is commonly called Chizkiyahu's tunnel, to the time when indeed the Tanakh tells us that Chizkiyahu was rerattling the Gichon. And here's a picture of Greenspan from that time he told you that we went there before we went to Harabayas. Here's Greenspan standing outside, coming out of the tunnel. And here's a picture from the late 19th century of what it looked like then. Again, you'll notice that all of the Arab houses that are there today are missing. Now, before we continue talking about archaeology and relating it to Tanakh, it's important to point out that things are not always as they seem, or at least not always as they're named. For example, Solomon's Stables that Ari Greenspan earlier showed us pictures of really have nothing to do with Shlomo HaMelech. Yad Avshalom that's in the Kidron Valley has nothing to do with Avshalom, David's son. David's citadel that we see when you come into Shaar Yafo has nothing to do with David HaMelech. Solomon's pools, which is what the Rabbi Resnick talked about, where the water came from during the time of the Bayis Sheni, had nothing to do with Melech Shlomo. And of course, the King David of Dal has nothing to do with King David. Okay, I want to mention a little bit about the Harabayas rescue system. Here's an aerial view of Harabayas. Here's the Kotel. And what we're going to focus on in this corner over here, where Ari Greenspan, again, he showed us the underground pictures, and Rabbi Resnick showed us what it looked like in the late 19th century. What has happened in recent years is that the Vlach, has brought up heavy moving equipment on the Harabayas. Harabayas, where today they won't let archaeologists dig, they won't let Jews on there to daven. The WAF bring on these huge bulldozers, full dump trucks, and they've emptied out over 300 dump trucks full of dirt from Harabayas. They've gone into what's called Solomon Stables and built a new underground mosque. They dumped all of that debris from Harabayas into the valley, and here we see in Emek Tsurim, this tent was set up by several archaeologists, and they've been running there now for several years, a sifting project in Emek Tsurim. They take that dirt. It's not a real archaeological dig. There's no strata. We don't know where the dirt came from. All we know, we don't know what period it came from. All we know is where it's coming from. And here you see people sifting. Here you see a hard-working helper taking the dirt that's going to be sifted. Here's how you sift it. You spritz it with water through these fine nets. You then sort it into these six buckets based on what you find, if it's pottery, if it's coins, if it's arrowheads. And then the archaeologists go through it. They dated approximately 10% of the findings from the Bayit Rishon period, meaning from Tkufat HaTanakh. Including in there, they found these arrowheads, and this very well-formed arrowhead that is similar to arrowheads found in other places from 586 BC. Meaning this arrowhead found on Harabayas was used by the Babylonians when they came to capture to Yerushalayim in the time of Churban Bayit Rishon. Okay, moving from Harabayas, I want to talk about something called bulas or signets or clay seals. Nowadays, we know that when you want to send a secret message, you get an email, you use RSA encryption, and you can send a secret message. Back then, it was much more difficult. They didn't yet have RSA encryption. So if you wanted to send a secret message, what did you do? You wrapped it up, like we see over here in this papyrus. You sealed it with a clay seal, and then you put your signature in, and you sent it with a messenger. Now, that didn't guarantee that people didn't read it, but it guaranteed that this messenger wasn't going to mess up twice. Because if when the message got to the other end, this signet over here, this seal was broken, then the recipient knew that the message had been opened and read. In Yer David, around Yerushalayim, we don't often find the papyrus with the seal because the papyrus gets ruined. This is an example from Elephantine, an island in southern Egypt, where they indeed found it with papyrus and the seals. This concept of signet rings is mentioned in Yirmiyahu, it's mentioned in Mishnayos Shabbos. And what's amazing, in 1982, they were digging in Yer David, in a section called Area G. They found a rich collection of artifacts that were all destroyed in buildings from the period of the Churban Bayis Rishon. There was a burnt building that they found there. In that burnt building, they found many things that were from the time of Bayis Rishon, including, in one square meter area, 51 bula, 51 of these seals. Because what happened? The building was burnt, the papyrus was burnt, but the clay seals were hardened because of the fire. 41 of those 51 were in excellent condition due to the fire. 47 of the 51 had names on them. 87% of the names are readable. And what's amazing is 50% of the 51 names, there are 51 names because they're father and son on these bulas, total of 51 names, 50 of them end in Yud-Heh-Vav, meaning a form of Hashem's name, names like Eliyahu, Chizkiyahu, names like that. The area where it was found is, for those who are near David, this is the area where they take you to sit while they talk to you. Right down here is where they found all those bulas, what they call the bula house, in a 1 meter square area. Here is a collection of those bulas. All the names appear to be Jewish. None are biblical persons except for, well, before I have the name, we have to read a story from Sefer Yirmiyahu. There, Yirmiyahu was no longer able to appear in public. The king said he doesn't want to hear from him anymore. Yirmiyahu is predicting the Churban. He says if you don't get rid of the corruption, if the king doesn't stop taking envelopes with cash, there's going to be a Churban. Now, if you're the king, you have one of two choices. You either stop taking the envelopes, or you take Yirmiyahu and you throw him in a pit. So Yirmiyahu is now persona non grata. He receives a nevuah. He writes the nevuah down. And the Navi tells us, then Baruch ben Neriah, who is Yirmiyahu's assistant, read from the book the words of Yirmiyahu in the house of the Lord, in the chamber of Gemariahu, the son of Shaphan, the scribe. So where did he read it? He went to some scribal chamber of Gemariahu ben Shaphan and read it there in the upper court at the entrance of the new gate of the Lord's house in the hearing of all the people. So we know that there was a sofer named Gemariahu ben Shaphan, and in the bula house they found a bula with the name Gemariahu ben Shaphan on it. Now, if this is really the Gemariahu ben Shaphan, And it makes sense, because we know he was also a sofer, which would make sense that he had a library of other documents. That would explain why there were 51 bulas in that very small area. That small area had been the scribal chambers of Gemariah ben Shafan. Well, if this is really the Gemariah ben Shafan, then this bula is almost like a personal regards from a well-known official and sofer in the court of a melech from Beis David. It's possibly his archives that were found. His father was also a sofer in a royal house. And his son is also mentioned in the Sifrei Nevi'im as an active participant. Thus, this bula hardened by fire, which was found in situ in a controlled excavation, is regards from 2,500 years ago, from the time of Bayez Rishon, from the time of Tanakh. Okay, here we see the walls of the so-called old city that we have today. Here's Har Bayez. Down here is Ir David. This dashed line is what archaeologists think was the walls in the mid-Bayez Rishon period, not the time of David and Shlomo, the time of Chizkiyahu after Yerushalayim was expanded. So this is the border of where they think Yerushalayim was. Do we have evidence? Have we found walls? And indeed, one of the most important findings that was found shortly after 67, after the archaeologists were able to go back and excavate in the Jewish quarter, is the so-called Broad Wall, which runs through the Jewish quarter of today. You can see why it's called the Broad Wall, how thick this wall is over here. Here's another look at the Broad Wall. Here is, again, another look at the Broad Wall. Here is the height of how high they think the wall went when it was full. And here's what it looked like during the excavations before the rover was rebuilt. There's a new excavation taking place on the other side today. That's in Har Zion. This excavation is not yet open to the public. This excavation we were taken to by the archaeologists just 2 weeks ago. Here you see a wall that they date to the Hashmonai period. This is clearly a corner of that wall. Here is a well-preserved wall from the Byzantine period. What's fascinating, it's clear that when they built this wall, which was slightly lower down on Har Zion, was already covered up. And this seems to be the natural place to build a wall. They were unaware there was a previous wall there. They just simply built the new wall in that same area. Here's the archaeologist standing in front of the Hasmonean wall. Here again is a general view. And up here on the top, which is not easy to see, hold on, where the mouse go? Here, up here, there's remnants of what looks like an older, smaller wall. And here's a view from on top. Here is the cross-section of this older wall, which the archaeologist has tentatively dated to the time of Bayez Rishon. If that's true, what we have now found is walls on the two sides. On the right side, the red square shows us where the broad wall is located, and on the left side, the red square shows us where that new wall has been found. You'll notice it's outside the borders of the current old city, and so we now have evidence of walls on both sides from the time of mid-Bayez Rishon. One of those important archaeological finds from the Bayez Rishon period was found on Ketef Inon. Those who have been to the Begin Center will know that the Begin Center sits on a rock cliff. Behind that rock cliff, there is a large area where had been a burial site in the time of Bayez Rishon. And, well, let me show you this. Here's Gali Barkai, the archaeologist who found it. Here is the repository. The way people were buried in the time of Bayez Rishon, a person would take the nifter, they would bury them in a family burial plot where they would have what almost looked like beds made out of stone. They would lay them on the bed. They even had sort of a little pillow there. After about a year, they would take the bones that were left and they would put the bones together with the bones of the previous generations. In here, in this little hole standing where he is, that's where the collection, the repository for those bones was. This area right behind the Begin Center had several of these bone repositories. All of them had been emptied out over the years. Anything that had been in them, including the bones, had been emptied out by grave robbers, people looking to take things. Fortunately, one of those, the one he's standing in front of, the roof had collapsed, and grave robbers were not aware that there had been a repository in there. When the archaeologists came, they found this collapsed roof, they removed it, and they found in there, here's again another view, you can see actually up here where they would have laid their bodies. The reason it looks like it's exposed, they didn't lay the bodies outside, it was inside. In later generations, this was used as a quarry, and the upper part of the burial site was destroyed. But they found inside here more than 700 items, including two small silver scrolls. The silver scrolls took 3 years to unroll. They wanted to find some technique where they could unroll without cracking the silver. Here's how they look, these silver rolls. Here's how it looks unrolled. Here's with the Ksav Ivri on it. And here's what it says. One of them has more detail. The second one is the one I want to look at, the one on the right. If you look at the end, it says, Yivrecha Hashem Yishmerecha, Yo'er Hashem Panav Elecha, V'yasim Lecha Shalom. It almost sounds like the Pesukim of Birchas Kohanim. It's missing a little bit of the third bracha. But what they suspect is that the copier simply skipped a line and copied down, because it's clear he's copying what we know today of as Birchas Kohanim. And this is the earliest biblical verses that have been found. This is dated from the, let's see what he dated here. I don't have the dating, but from the mid-Bayis Rishon period. Okay, the question that some people might have is, who cares about location? So it's great, I could show you where Chizkiyahu's tunnel was. I could show you where Nachal Kidron, where the battles took place. I could show you these sites where the burial caves was. But is the site really so important? And I really began to wonder that. We landed on Erev Shabbos. We landed early in the morning at Newark Airport. We drove up to Davin Shacharis and a shul in Teaneck. And there in the lobby, they have what looks like a reconstructed coastal Amaroli. And it even has the gates around it. It almost looks like you're at the coastal. Maybe that's good enough. Does it matter if you're at the actual site? And the answer is still costs. I mean, with the coastal, it's silly to bring the example. It's the place that gives the significance to the artifacts. And indeed, the Mishnah in Brachos tells us, Haroa Makam Shanasa Bo Nisim Yisrael, Omer Baruch Shos and Nisim Avasenu Bo Makam Hazeh. If you see a site in which there had been a nace, it's not trivial, but rather the significance to that site. And to be able to go to places where we know Gemayar Ben Shafan was, where we know that they found Pesukim from Bayis Rishon, to go where Avram Avinu stood before the Akedah, there's significance to those sites. What's very interesting, Yigal Yadin, a very famous archaeologist, who was not at all from, in an interview with Biblical Archaeology Review in 1983, said, but it is absolutely untrue that archaeology disproves the Bible. On the contrary, I think archaeology proves it. If someone attacks the Bible saying it is not historical, that it is nonsense or fiction, then I say that archaeology has increased my belief, and that basically the historical parts of the Bible are true. No doubt of that. I think archaeology has actually given me, if you ask me subjectively, a greater respect for the Bible. So I think the message to take home, the message of Yerushalayim Shilmata, of the archaeology from Yerushalayim, is that seeing it in situ, seeing all of these things that we could find in the ground, greatly facilitates one's understanding of Tanakh, and studying Tanakh clarifies the artifacts that remain found in the ground. The traditions, the Masorahs of our past, are inexorably bound with our present and with our future. And just one last thing to conclude with, this pasuk has become very famous in recent years, Ata Tarkum Tarchem Sion, Ki Eitzach Ananach Yivo Moed, right? God is going to come, the time has come. But what does the next pasuk say? The next pasuk tells us why. Ki Rotsu Avadecha Es Avaneha, your servants wanted your stones, Yes Afara Yechananu. The Jewish people want to dig their hands, they want to get dirty with the dirt of the land of Israel. And one last slide, just for this one, I have to thank my children who helped with this PowerPoint, and El Ad, which is the Ir David Amuta, non-profit organization, for some of the photos and information.